I hope this is one of those episodes you've all been waiting for. The great Steve Allen joined us on April 11th, 1993, for a fascinating interview. Now, he was supposed to be on at 11 p.m., but no one answered. I kept trying throughout the hour and finally connected. His wife, Jane Meadows, answered the phone. Somehow, our scheduled interview didn't make it into his book, but he was happy to stay and took calls, too. I have to say that it's never lost on me, as I still get giddy, when I think about the people I've spoken to, met, and worked with during those years. Especially when we were planning Norm's 50th anniversary, and I had all these famous local broadcasters calling my home to set up interviews and coordinate sending in a tape. Even when I produced the Boston Bruins broadcast, it was always a thrill to be there in the booth every night with Hall of Famer, the Chief, Johnny Busick. Radio was all I wanted to do in my life. I've missed it greatly, but I am so happy to be doing it here. The vault has been very kind in its preservation of these great times that Norm and I had together. I love sharing these times with you. It's time to let the interview speak for itself. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Norm Nathan with Steve Allen.
It's 11 after midnight. Hey, we have Steve Allen is on the line with us. Hold on a minute. Let's see. Yes. Oh, I'm so glad to talk with you, Steve Allen. How nice for you to come on with it. I'm beginning to stutter. Because I'm in awe of you. That's why.
Oh well, my goodness. I'm sorry. I'm late. We were out at a restaurant with my wife or her sister and a friend of ours, and I just got back in last night from New Orleans. We were there for 2 days, and somehow this appointment didn't get into the right place in my book. Anyway, here I am.
I'm delighted. I talked with Joe Goodman a little bit earlier. We talked about that Humor Project conference that's coming up next week, and called the 8th Annual International Conference on the Positive Power of Humor and Creativity. I just have to tell you, we have talked a couple of times before, but you have talked with so many people that you wouldn't remember. But to me, you're about one of the greatest humorists, I think, in the history of the civilized world. I think you're very special.
Well, whether you're right or wrong, I thank you for that flattering opinion.
Hey, I'm right. Don't argue with me. Because I control the microphone and all of this stuff. Anyway, I was mentioning the fact that I know your son, Dr. Steve Allen Jr., will be there, and I did talk with him once. He came into Boston, I think, to a medical convention, mm-hmm. and his role in that was also to talk about how humor can help people who are not doing too well physically, but can help them in that sense. And he was like talking with you. He cackles. His laughter is the same as yours.
He has a cute sense of humor.
What did you say? An acute sense of humor?
No, I say he has a cute sense of humor.
Oh, I thought you were throwing in a medical term. Anyway, in addition to coming to the convention to receive an award and also to speak, and I can't think of anybody who would be better at that. There are a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. Incidentally, I've read your current book, which is your 38th or something like that?
I think it's the 41st.
Oh, somehow you slipped a few by me. This is called How to Be Funny, Discovering the Comic.
Oh, that. I see. Yeah. That probably is the 38th, but we're up now to the 41st.
Have you written three books since this one?
Yes.
Oh, that's incredible. One book I read, you did on comedians. You did profiles on a whole group of comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you said about Woody Allen at that time that I thought was, I'd never heard anybody say that, and I'd always kind of thought of it myself. You compared him with S.J. Perelman.
Yes.
You recall that? And I had never heard anybody make that comparison before.
Yes, the Woody Allen that's available on the printed page happens to be my favorite. I also love him as a film director and as a comic actor. I used to love him back when he did stand-up. But I think the very best Woody Allen, the funniest, is the man who writes the humorous essays. And his best, I think, are as good as Perlman's and Benchley's.
Yeah, okay. I remember reading his stuff, of course, originally in the New Yorker magazine, which used to print a lot of his stuff, and then later on, of course, in book form. He's done a lot. But aside from the fact Perelman used words that nobody ever in the entire world ever used before, his sense of vocabulary was tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of that, Woody Allen's vocabulary was a little more, I don't know how to describe that, a little less... intellectual maybe, but yet the approach I thought was just so similar. What do you think he was influenced a lot by him, or is that just a coincidence?
I haven't the slightest idea. Nobody hangs out with Woody. I mean, people hang around with, you know, Bob Hope and Milton Berle, and we did with Groucho. But I don't know of any other comedians who have ever hung around with Woody, so I've never had a chance to put questions to him.
Now,
he lives pretty much on his own planet as far as the world of comedy is concerned.
Yeah. Now, David Letterman, of course, always attributes the fact that he was very much inspired by you, and some of the kind of nutty things he does remind me of the wild, off-the-wall kinds of stuff that you used to do through the years, except I thought you did a whole lot more of them, and maybe more consistently through the years, and you didn't have the luxury or the ease of interviewing people. You know, I mean, your stuff was all bits, as I recall, on the old Tonight Show when you began that.
That was a talk show, too. We interviewed people, but it was the funnier parts, I guess, that people remember.
Oh, that's true. You did. That's silly. I've forgotten that. Yeah. We were talking about, you know, this is such old hat to you. Does it bother you talking about what you did back then?
No, I guess it would if I hadn't been doing it for years, but I still work 7 days a week. I just got in, as I say, from New Orleans, where I did a comedy concert down there, so I'm constantly performing.
Will you be coming back to this area again, do you think, around the Boston area?
I honestly don't have a trip scheduled at the moment, but all the entertainers in the world, where they go is where they are hired. It's that simple. So if anybody wants to see me in Boston, all they do is hire me. If they want to see Michael Jackson, they hire him.
That's right, too. And if they want to see me, they can hire me, but heck, what the heck. But last time you did, you were at one of the comedy clubs. I forgot which one. I met you then. We did some stuff on tape.
Oh, yeah. It had a name like Joe's or some place like that. Nick's or something.
Nick's, that's it. Nick's.
That
Nick's is exactly it. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Good place.
There's the stand-up stuff like that that you do. I don't know whether you'd call what you do stand-up. It's hard to pin what you do on any special label because you get your own style so beautifully.
Well, comedy is one of the professional areas in which I work, but even within comedy, I do. I don't just do one thing. I do different kinds of comedy.
Is it tougher to do it by yourself than in the past where you've had TV shows and you've had whole casts and all that and people to play against?
No, in fact, it's easier, less troublesome if I work alone.
Now, why is that? Is that because the others nobody's there to give you trouble?
I don't really know. It's just if you do anything reasonably well, then I hope this is true of all other entertainers, it's really easy for you if you're, a great fighter. I don't think you ever have much trouble fighting, you know, until you run into somebody who fights better than you do, and then that night you have trouble.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that competitive about comedy, so if you do it well and the money is big and the audiences laugh, what's the problem? You know, it's an easy way to make a living.
Yeah, because along the way you discovered so many very funny people. I guess that's why I'd forgotten about the interview, because you had your basic cast through the years on that show and some other shows afterwards was with Louis Nye and...
Mm-hmm.
Was Don Knotts started with you, did he not?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Dayton Allen?
Yeah, wonderfully funny.
Yeah, although I'm not a doctor, I used to hang around drugstores a lot. I just remember so many of the lines.
Yeah.
And the stuff when you used to... Was it the New York Daily News? You'd read the letters to the editor?
Probably 90% of our letters over the years were from the news, yes.
I love that when you put the hat on and you would start pounding on the table, trying to inject the kind of feeling that the people who wrote the letters felt at the time he wrote that, and then the audience would react with the boos and the cheers.
Right.
I mean, that's a very unusual kind of bit. I can't think of anybody who would have thought of doing something like that. Nobody ever did.
Yeah, that's one of the few bits that have not been, shall we say, borrowed by other performers. But anyway, the thinking up of it was not very difficult. I had long observed ever since I was a kid that a lot of newspapers printed letters that were written in fury, but when you read them, you may be having a nice morning and you don't get that angry, and I think you should. At least the person who wrote the letter thought you should, too, get angry, join him in his anger. So that's the idea of the bit.
Yeah. Can you hold on just one second? We'll take a break for a couple of words, and we'll be right back.
All right.
And again, I'm very flattered that you're on with me. Steve Allen.
Does your baby suffer from red, irritating diaper rash?
Diaper rash was like red, a little irritated. They're cranky. They do cry a lot. Babies are hard to tell about because they can't tell you what hurts or what don't hurt.
Now your baby can get relief from diaper rash with Baby Gold Bond medicated powder. Just listen to Robert Hannes of Wilton, Iowa.
I would say it's a good product, the Baby Gold Bond. To me, it soothes the baby and makes him feel comfortable.
Baby Gold Bond medicated powder combines zinc oxide with the finest talcum powder to relieve baby's red, irritated skin. Baby Gold Bond also protects baby's sensitive skin against diaper rash, chafing, and minor skin irritations.
Baby Gold Bond's some of the best. It seems to help them get over the crankiness. I've told a lot of people. I told them it's real soothing and it really helps.
For your baby's diaper rash, try Baby Gold Bond medicated powder. Use only as directed. Available at all Brooks drugstores.
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Maynard with an invitation for you to join me on our trip to Hawaii. Three islands, Oahu, the Big Island of Hawaii, and Maui. And we'll be leaving May 23rd. And on Oahu, we'll be staying right on Waikiki Beach in the shadow of Diamond Head. Three sensational days of sunning, swimming, surfing. We'll visit Pearl Harbor. Maybe you'd like to feed the fish at Honama Bay. And then we fly to Hilo on the Big Island with its black sandy beaches, where you'll see and learn all about the world's most active volcano, Kilauea. We'll fly from Kona to Maui, where we'll stay on the fabulous Kanapali Beach. You'll want to take the shuttle to Lahaina, once home to the world's largest sailing fleets. And you know what? Maybe we'll throw in some whales for good measure. There's so much to see and do, it's going to be some kind of a vacation in Hawaii. Call Caitlin Travel at 862-6229. Again, that's Caitlin Travel, 862-6229.
Monday, April 19th, the 97th Annual Boston Marathon. Keep your radio tuned to WBZ for award-winning wire-to-wire coverage starting at 11:30. Marathon 1993 coverage is brought to you by Grossman's, the Mass State Lottery, Olympic Airlines, Claire Audi, and the Fitness Advantage Network. This is Gil Santos. Join me, Tom Cuddy, marathon analyst Sharon Barbano, and the entire WBZ News team for the most extensive marathon coverage you'll get anywhere. Be a part of Marathon 93 with your first source for news. WBZ, News Radio 1030.
We're talking with Steve Allen, which, as I mentioned, is one of the great thrills for me, because among the humorists that I've enjoyed through the years will be Steve Allen and Fred Allen, no relation, as they always say in parentheses in the newspapers, and Jack Benny, and not too many others who I think have held up through the years with the kind of humor that really lasts, as well as yours does, Steve Allen. So, I thank you. Tell me about now the current book you have is what? I somehow missed that.
Well, the latest one to come out is another one of my murder mysteries, comic murder mysteries. It's called The Murder Game.
Now, what kind of a schedule do you have to be able to do all the things that you're doing? Are you pretty well organized?
In some ways I am, yes. It's become a necessity, I suppose. I work 7 days a week, so that gives me a two-day advantage over most folks, I suppose. I didn't decide to do that. It's just that I really don't know how to take a day off. I might stay home on a Friday or a Saturday or Sunday, but I'm working at home. I do a great deal of my work wherever I want to because the writing is all done with a small handheld tape recorder, so it obviously doesn't matter whether I'm at my desk or on an airplane or at the beach or wherever I might be. So I dictate all day long, and as I dictate a particular item, I specify the category or the heading. For example, when I was writing The Murder Game, I would just open a bit of dictation by saying, The Murder Game, Chapter 7. Well, Bob said, quote, and I dictate the punctuation, the paragraphing, the type, everything, because that saves the transcribers a lot of time and me a lot of trouble at the editorial stage later. If I'm writing a joke or a funny poem or a funny song or an idea for a comedy movie, whatever, that just has the label funny stuff, and then it gets filed in that particular category at the office. So that's a good part of the explanation. Now, where the creative ideas come from, that's a total mystery, which has been addressed by all the major and minor philosophers and psychiatrists and creative people. As a matter of fact, I just finished writing an article for The Skeptic magazine They've asked about, I guess, 20 or 30 prominent people to write a few pages on the subject of genius. I am not a genius. I am versatile, and that's quite another matter. But anyway, they solicited my views. So I never get bored with anything, because I guess if I did one thing, I could get bored with it, but I do 27 things, and there's no room for boredom in all that activity.
I know whether or not you're a genius, I won't debate you on it. To me, you come about as close to that as I can think of. For example, you did that meeting of the, it was called Meeting of the Minds, when you wrote the dialogue for people of many times different eras, great people, mm-hmm. the kinds of things they would say to each other should they meet. Again, mm-hmm. it's not the kind of thing that your ordinary stand-up comic does. So you're not the ordinary stand-up comic, obviously.
That's true. Well, just the fact that I can do some things that Jerry Lewis can't doesn't make me a genius. And Jerry Lewis is one of the funniest people on earth, so that's not to put him down at all. No, versatile people are sort of freaks. They can easily be compared, I think, to what psychiatrists call the idiot savants, or psychologists. The idiot savant, there was one in the motion picture, The Rain Man. They are quite inferior, I mean, intellectually inferior, mentally inferior sometimes for brain damage at birth or whatever reason. They might not be able to find their way home or tie their own shoelaces, but at one particular thing, they are sometimes remarkably gifted, so they are superior at that one thing. And there is literally no theoretical explanation for that as yet. Perhaps in the future there will be. And nobody knows where exceptional talent comes from. It doesn't come from the things that we'd like to tell children it comes from. It doesn't come from hard work or dedication or determination not to be defeated in your life's ambitions or whatever. You just seem to have it. Some people just have a remarkable facility for the creation of music. Other people are gifted at the manipulation of mathematical symbols. Other people have a freaky brain that once you educate it minimally and put it into the field of science, it comes up with remarkable inventions and theories. Again, the point of all this is we know who the great poets are, we know who the great composers are, but we cannot explain, nor can they, why they are so good at what they do.
One thing that you have done through the years is keep up a high quality of new and creative ideas. Now, most people, even the best of them, run out of ideas after a while, or they began rewriting themselves.
Yeah, that's
but you don't. You come up with new thoughts all the time. I can't understand. I can't understand how you do that.
Well, believe it or not, which is the point I was making, I can't either. It's not that I made a solemn vow. I would never go back and do an old dumb idea again. Therefore, I have to think of new ones. The thing is, I just do think of new things every day. And not all of them have to do with my work. I think of insights and philosophy and foreign policy and medicine, all kinds of ideas. But I didn't instruct my brain to do that. I'm an illiterate so far as music is concerned, which simply means I can't read music. But the Guinness Book of World Records reported a few years ago I was the most prolific composer known. So I can't take any credit for that unless I'm also going to start taking bows for having brown eyes. Nobody asked me before I was born what color eyes would you like. You know, it was all stamped out by the great genetic cookie cutter.
Well, now how do you do the music then? Does somebody else transcribe it while you play the song?
No, I just turn on a tape recorder next to my piano, and I do that every time a number occurs to me, at least if it does here at home. And then I finally have maybe 30 or so melodies on that cassette, and then we send it out to a copyist who cannot compose a note but can write down on paper whatever music he hears.
I forgot, of course, there are such things as tape recorders that are just as good as transcribers at the moment. I have never been able to bring myself up into the 90s. See, you're a 90s man. In the year 2000, you'll be a 2000. Mm-hmm. I sound like a Mel Brooks record now, the 2000-year-old man or something like that. But I just admire that so much. There are a lot of people who want to talk to you. Am I imposing upon you if I ask if you'd hang around till just a few minutes after the news and a few minutes, and we'll take a few calls?
I can take some calls, sure.
You're a lovely man. You know that. You're becoming more of my hero every second. Oh, thanks a million. Steve Allen, who's our guest with us here on WBZ.
Listen to Something You Should Know at 12:54 during the WBZ News Hour at noon. Your first source for news and information, WBZ News Radio 1030.
Jurors on the Rodney King tape beating trial will be back deliberating on Easter Sunday after mulling the fate of the four defendants for 2.5 hours on Saturday. Before sending the case to the jury, the judge warned them not to allow the anticipation of any external consequences to influence their verdict. That's an apparent reference to last year's Los Angeles riots. The water crisis continues in Milwaukee, where officials say a parasite has infected city water mains. So far, thousands of people have reported coming down with all kinds of symptoms, and Mayor John Norquist says they should keep boiling water or buy bottled water until at least Wednesday. I didn't want to tell you the symptoms, but it's diarrhea and vomiting. And I think when I say those words, it detracts from me as a WBZ sex symbol. Anyway, thousands of Roman Catholics have gathered in St. Peter's Basilica in Vatican City for an Easter vigil service led by Pope John Paul II. On Easter morning, the Pope will celebrate Mass in St. Peter's Square. Let's check traffic now with Fred Gendron, WBZ 24-hour traffic network. Hey, Fred, you're new around these parts, are you, or are you just new on the all-night program?
I'm just new on the all-night program.
Well, let me extend a welcome to you. You'll really love it here. We're all just a friendly bunch of swell guys.
Thank you very much, Norman. Boy, it's just so glad to be so nice to be here. See, my tongue does not work after hours. So I'll have to keep slapping myself here and there.
I do that. It's a belt right across the jaw. Sometimes you have to go far enough to even break your own nose, but after that it becomes...
You just put it back in place and it's no problem.
Yeah, everything becomes a piece of cake.
Okay, we've got a couple of breakdowns out there, Norm, to watch out for. This is eastbound on the turnpike. We have one by exit 11A, which would be 495, and then another one by exit 13 in Framingham, both off to the right-hand side. Really not all that much of a factor, but just something to be aware of right now. And we do have some standing water in spots in the far left and right travel lanes as you're making your way through many of the interstates, so keep that in mind. Also some fog to deal with this morning. Fred Gendron, WBZ, 24-hour traffic network.
WBZ's Calling All Sports.
I'm Upton Bell.
And I'm Norm Risha. This week, Upton, Calling All Sports is on the road.
That's what I love, being on the road. We're broadcasting live from a steak in the neighborhood at the Sheraton Boston Hotel and Tower.
Join us for food, fun, and fabulous sports conversation.
And especially being with you, Norm. And if you can't join us at the steak in the neighborhood, join us on the radio right here on WBZ AM 1030.
Calling All Sports, tonight, starting at 6, here on WBZ News Radio 1030.
And that's where you're tuned. Oh, yes. Norm Nathan here, along with Tony Nesbitt, our producer. And our guest is Steve Allen, who's out there on the West Coast. And anyway, the lines have been lighting up with people who just desperately want to talk with you. And I don't blame them. And I've been kind of holding you for myself. But let's get to Richard here in Boston. Richard.
Hi, yes. Good evening.
Hi.
It's a doubleheader for me. I just viewed the player, so I saw... Steve Allen and his wife, Jane Meadows, in a cameo performance this evening.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, yeah, that was a great movie. I love that.
It is.
Yeah, very interesting movie. The ending was a bit of a surprise, but that's not the reason of my calling. I'm wondering whether you did another program, I believe, something called History Imperfect or Past Perfect. And it was a roundtable discussion. Do I have the title incorrect? And you would stop in the middle of discussing a famous event in history and discuss how the possible ending.
I draw a total blank on what you're saying, taking your words literally.
Didn't you?
Possible that you might be referring to a series I did for PBS for 4 years called Meeting of Minds.
Were you dressed in costume at times?
No, I never was, but we had such guests as Plato, Aristotle,
okay.
Aquinas, Augustine, Luther, Voltaire, people of that stature, and they, of course, appeared in there.
Okay, that's probably what I'm thinking about. And secondly, I'm wondering whether any of your programs are probably on Kinescope, if anything. Would they be available on film? And
There isn't much of anybody's old television shows that's available on film. Even the shows that were filmed, such as I Love Lucy, are available now mostly in video cassette, wherever they are. But a lot of my stuff is available, for example, all over the country on the cable channel called Comedy Central. They are running pretty much the whole 4 years of that series I did with those wonderful guys, Don Knotts, Tom Poston, Louis Nye, Gabe Dell, Dayton Allen, all those fellows. So if you can see Comedy Central on your channel, there's 4 years of my stuff for you.
Well, that's wonderful. We don't have it on my system, but I'll have to...
I've discovered that a lot of people can see it, but don't know they can. I don't know whether you can or not, but the simple way to find out is call your cable service and ask, do you carry Comedy Central? And sometimes they'll say, yeah, just tune into Channel 47, and there it is.
Well, I think your type of humor is really needed in today's television. I don't think most... Kelvin humor can hold a candle to your quality of humor.
Well, I agree with you, Richard. I want to move on to the next caller.
Thank you
so much. But he's absolutely right. I just think television, and not just television, needs you. I don't know what television needs, but people really do need a laugh, and they need something clever and something sharp. And it's a shame for you not to be on a more regular basis. Maybe it's something that you look upon with horror. Maybe it's something you don't even want to do.
No, everything is an individual decision, so something might come along that'll appeal to me.
I hope so. We have another fella named Steve who's down in Virginia. Hi, Steve.
Hey, far out. Very good. Steve Allen was one of my favorite people. Funny guy, for sure. I mean, making a banana. I mean, how can you? I mean, do the whole thing backwards and run it forwards. I mean, did that take very long to do?
No, it was done in sort of real time, but the tape was run backwards. That idea was actually created by some engineers working for a comedian and actor named Chuck McCann.
Oh, yeah, sure, right.
He was doing a local show at the time. This is about 30 years ago. And he showed me this one day. He said, I can't do much with this. I'm just doing a local show, and it's for kids. But he said it would fit perfectly into your mindset. So we did a long series of sketches. One of the sketches was called Furno the Great. I was dressed as a musician with a top hat and a big cape. And Jane was my assistant with the net stockings and that sort of thing. And by simply doing a bunch of things backwards, and then at the time of taping, walking backwards, we created the illusion that it was forwards. Now, running motion picture film backwards has been around for 60, 70 years, but it always looked like backwards film. Whereas tape looks exactly like live. So you cannot tell whether something is live or tape by just looking at it. So when you did that backwards, the illusion was much more startling. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, that is a funny, funny bit. I've laughed. But the thrust of my question is this. I'm not going to hog you because I know there must be a million people want to speak. But the allusion earlier to David Letterman, who I enjoy also, but the primary difference that I see, and you may have a different thought on this, is that the difference between yourself and David Letterman, and much of comedy today, which I don't see in the comedy of yesterday, and I'm glad I don't see it in the comedy of yesterday, because it gets to be a bit overwhelming today, is the cynicism. Maybe I missed something, but I don't see the cynicism at least in the older Steve Allen stuff, mm-hmm. that I see today with David, cynicism there.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. David, and he's the one who has mentioned this time and again, so I've always been grateful to him. He has done a lot of my routines, and he's done them very well, and he's always acknowledged that they're my routines. So as I say, I do appreciate that. But his personal style and mine are totally different. I obviously can't refer to myself here in flattering terms, and he's doing very well and deserves his success, but our personal approaches to comedy or to life, I guess, are almost at opposite poles.
Yeah, it's
one of the big differences, pardon me for interrupting
you. No, go ahead.
One of the big differences between the older line talk show guys, Johnny Carson, of course, Jack Parr, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas, myself, a few others, is that we all came out of radio. We had done other things, too. Some of us were in movies and Broadway and whatever, but we were basically radio-trained people. Whereas today, the guys are coming out of the comedy clubs. And one of the remarkable differences is you hear surprisingly few sentences from today's talk show hosts, even if there are some sentences on the cue cards that have been written by people who communicate in sentences because they're called writers. But you could watch a Johnny Carson monologue and have your secretary transcribe it, and you'd see it consisted largely of sentences. Today, you get pieces of sentences and pieces of thoughts, and it's all kind of rambling and disjointed and disconnected.
You know, also, and I guess I'm talking about also the comics you see on television who perform in front of that brick wall that I'm getting nauseous with. Mm-hmm. I find that I very rarely laugh at what they say. Sometimes at the most, you may kind of smack your lips a little and say, yeah, that's kind of funny. You say that almost as though you're watching the old Omnibus show or something, you know.
Yeah.
But watching you was an hysterical experience. You couldn't help but just laugh about that.
Well, I had such a good time myself, and I guess that factor was shared or communicated at least to the audience. I was never doing something I had done 4,000 times before. In fact, whether it's a good idea or a bad one is a separate question, but I'm the only comedian in show business who doesn't have an act. I had to do, obviously everybody who does a talk show has to do a new show every night. You can't repeat anything unless the tape is repeated.
Well,
but that turned out to be a good idea for those of us who did work in TV. Some guys have a great 19 minutes, and after that, they're in bad trouble. But if you never had to develop that 19 minutes, then you're freer. You're generally faster on your feet. You think faster. And if you have any gift for wit at all, you have plenty of room to develop it.
Well, if I can interject, I think the difference between what you do and what you've done and what is going on now, that, to be sure, there's stuff today, there's some very funny stuff, to be sure, but
sure.
To make a generalization, it's the difference between being hip and being terminally hip.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
Johnny Carson had a degree of hipness. I did, because I came from, you know, jazz music, and it was talking like that when the only people who were, that I'm talking about back in the 30s and 40s, the only people who spoke like that then were musicians, jazz musicians, black or white, black originally and then white too. The first comedian to work that way completely so that he really sounded in his early days more like a musician than a comic was Lenny Bruce, who was one of my favorites. Still far ahead of the pack. Any young comic who wants to be hip now or just wants to be successful and funny should get all of Lenny's old albums, and stay home for about a month and study them carefully.
Mm. Yeah,
you were among the hippest, let me tell you, Bud.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, that is the Steve from Virginia.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate hearing from you.
No problem. Enjoyed it.
Enjoyed your questions. I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed them too, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's Harry, who's in Jamaica Plain. Harry.
Hello, Steve.
Howdy, Harry.
It's a pleasure to hear your voice again. I was just hopping into bed, and I was listening to Norm Nathan, and I know my friend Steve Allen. I haven't heard talk to him since for 45 years, and I bet you remember my name and everything.
Give me your name again.
That was, I was in Song Cecile. You made me swing out of something.
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
The one on your program.
No, tell him your name, Harry.
Beg your pardon?
Tell him your whole name.
Harry Hughes, H-U-W-E-S.
Now, okay.
Jamaica Plain.
Now, how would Steve Allen remember you? What was it you did together?
Well, Steve, let's see. I taped both of the programs that were on. That is, the programs were taped. The April.
You're talking about the song?
And the May programs that I was on with Steve.
Are you talking about the
sale.
Sir, can you hear me?
Yeah, hold on a minute, Harry, and listen to the question.
Are you talking about a show called Songs for Sale?
That's true.
I see. I was the host of that only for about 1 year, and I think that was around 1952 or so.
52 is exactly right.
Yeah, so we're talking about long, long ago, and I'm sorry to say I don't remember the names of the contestants at this late date.
Oh, my goodness. remember, it was a Stones, Jamaica Plain, it was a Stones throw from Boston.
Harry, that's 40 years ago, Harry. Come on, give
okay,
Steve a
I'm
break.
Sorry. Well, anyway, I've got one of your songs still on the piano here. Pretend You Don't See Her.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a big hit
okay,
for Jerry
Vale. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Steve.
Hey, thanks for the call, Harry.
You
must run into that an awful lot. Somebody will say we passed quickly on the street in 1906.
Whenever I travel, in other words, if I get out and, you know, I'm walking through airports or grocery stores or whatever, it happens literally every one of those days. Another complicating factor is that I attended 18 schools in all. And if you go to any school and later you become known as a famous golfer, a famous football coach, a famous priest, or whatever you do for a living, everybody remembers you because the word is around that, Charlie Krellman or whoever you are went to our school here. But as I say, there are 18 such schools in my memory file. So I'm constantly running into people who say, hey, remember how it was back at St. Thomas Church or whatever? And unfortunately, I remember a few things about it, but I can't give you the names of the 800 other students.
I know it, and people are so disappointed when you can't. They think,
oh, yeah,
oh, he was
it
okay.
Very personally sometimes.
Oh, that's right. He was okay then, but boy, has he gotten
snobbed.
Yeah, he's
got a big head now, doesn't remember it.
Oh, sure, yeah, that's right. Huey and Quincy. There's something kind of a nice alliteration about Huey from Quincy.
Hello, I'm Huey from Quincy, Norm.
I think I just said that.
Yes, I think you did, too.
What?
When I called you, I didn't expect the honor of speaking with Steve Allen.
Oh, you've been hanging on for a while. Do you have any question to ask Steve?
Well, I was just wondering if Steve has anything working on television now.
Well, the series I mentioned before, the one with Louis and I and Bill Dana and that great gang, is on all the time on Comedy Central.
Oh, really?
And they're rerunning another one of my old series called Host to Host. It was a limited series of 13 specials. And I did 12 specials for the Disney Channel people, which they constantly rerun. So, yeah, a lot of people are writing in that they're seeing me one place or another.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing a regular series of my own at the moment.
I saw you as
well. I enjoy your series very much.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for calling, Huey.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't ready with too many good questions.
No,
I wasn't expecting to speak with them.
No, your question was deep and penetrating and quite provocative. And on a scale of 1 to 10, it would rank up to, I don't know, I'm beginning to mumble on now. In fact, I saw you yesterday, they were running the Benny Goodman story. And you look so much like Benny Goodman, every time I see that thing, I can't get over it.
I've never known, I'm not sure Benny or I ever agreed as to how much of a compliment that was, but the picture is getting a lot of showing lately, yes.
Okay. Jack in Milton is one of my favorite callers, and I have a feeling, Jack, that you're going to ask something really, really fascinating.
Well, I'm certainly delighted that Steve finally came on. This is really a red letter evening for all of
Thank
us.
Thank you.
And Steve, I was wondering if you remembered a piece that you did, I believe, for the Saturday Evening Post back in the, was it the 60s or 70s?
I have written for the Post, yes.
Yeah. And it was the story of your boyhood days and your family and how in the Allen household, cereal boxes were not neatly cut at the top about a quarter of an inch and then flapped back. They looked like they were torn open by an enraged animal.
Yeah, that's how it was in our house.
You talked about an uncle who used to frequent bars and get into political arguments and come home a mess.
Oh, yeah, that was my Uncle Steve. Yeah, the Donahues, that was my mother's family. I lived with them because my father died when I was an infant.
Yeah.
They were really people from the 17th century. What they were doing in our century, I don't think even they understood. They weren't too hip with, automobiles and flashlights and things, but they managed to get the cereal out of the box, but it got stale pretty fast because you couldn't close it again.
That's great.
Well, you know, I was thinking earlier in the evening as I was listening to the program before you came in, Steve, and they had this gentleman that was talking about humor and so forth, and the thought kept coming through my mind that it falleth like the gentle rain from heaven, and you've certainly put your finger on it when you said it's a matter of really a natural bent or genius or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've cleared up a lot of things, certainly for me tonight, when I start wondering, you know, where has all the wonderful humor gone that we knew years ago, and as you described
it's really a worrisome problem in that it's part of a general cultural and ethical and moral collapse, and 14 other kinds of collapse too, but we don't have to branch out to all of those right now. Yeah, there's been a deterioration of simple manners, and it's really one of the most serious issues we could be discussing. It's a pity we don't have about 3 nights to keep going on it. We're talking about the collapse of the American family. We're talking about a collapse of educational standards. We're talking about an elevator shaft, coal mine shaft, deep descent in the quality of American music. There was a true golden age recognized all over the earth when American music was respected as the greatest simply because it was. It was provided by Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, Jerome Kern, Duke Ellington, about 15 or 20 other giant talents who had the gift of melody or writing literate lyrics, soulful, insightful lyrics. And that stopped, oddly enough, right about in the mid-century. It didn't stop totally. Even now there's an occasional defined song written, but now there probably aren't 5 of them a year. In the old days, there used to be 100 a year, at least, and by some standards, more than that. So there isn't anything much, whether you're talking about religion, whatever, there isn't anything much which hasn't gone through a serious collapse, a deterioration, and that's simply reflected in comedy.
Well, that's why Norman and I live in the catacombs and are trying to keep it alive, right, Tom?
No,
I know
true.
Other people want to get on. God bless you, Steve, and it's a privilege to talk to you.
Very kind of you, sir. Thanks for your good
thoughts. You never said that about me, Jack.
Well, I did.
Get out of here. Okay, that's Jack. Now, I don't know. You don't know. Our slogan here is to leave the world a little sillier than you found it.
Well, that's what I'm doing, too, I guess.
Okay. We'll take just one more call. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the project coming up this coming weekend, and I'll let you go. But because you said you could talk for hours for the next several days, and so far as I'm concerned, you got this program as your dais to do that.
Well, we'll jump in again on some other nights and carry that out longer.
I'd love to do that.
I am looking forward to that humor project thing, which is going on in the Saratoga, New York area, as I guess you've already heard. For one reason, it'll give me a chance to visit my son, my oldest son, Steve Jr., the doctor, and his 4-year-old son, Andrew, and 2-year-old son, Ryan. I don't get to see them often enough, so I'm looking forward to that.
And of course, that's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you will be given an award in the whole business. And I guess Dr. Steve, has he been part of this project for a very long time?
Yes. In fact, Steve and I always look for occasions to get together since we live 3,000 miles apart. And about once a year, sometimes more than once each year, we take part in some such get-together. They're very common now all over the country, 2 or 3 or 4 days. People discuss various aspects of humor, very serious, sometimes very silly. There are clowns there. There's many different kinds of humor, as you know. And people sometimes who are in the health sciences learn a lot that they can apply in their work. So it's very stimulating. And again, selfishly speaking, I get to hang out with my son.
Okay, that's really great. You're ad-libbing, man. I mean, I everybody has told you this to the point maybe it gets kind of sickening to you. But you ad-lib better than just about anybody I can think of. You come up with some great lines, which really make me hate you at times, because I keep thinking, well, if I'm in that position, I never would have come up with that. What a natural comeback that is. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Speaking of natural funniness, I get some of my funniest lines that I now use in my comedy concerts from my grandchildren. I'll just give you one example, otherwise I'll have 57 I'll give to you. My son Steve, as I said, has a little boy named Andy, 4 years old. And I was talking to him 2 days ago on the phone. And you know how when little children, even if they're talkative, they don't seem to talk much on the phone. They don't understand why Grandpa's so far away and all they hear is his voice. So generally there's a parent or an aunt or somebody standing nearby coaching them with their lines to whoever's on the phone. So we had this little silly conversation, and finally it was time to wrap it up. So I could hear Steve Jr. say to Andy, "Andy, say goodbye and tell Grandpa that you love him." So I hear the little voice say, "Grandpa?" And I said, "What, honey?" And he said, I'm in love with you. I guess you heard that line in a movie or something, but
that's good.
That's funny. It's adorable. Good.
Let me just take one final call, and then I'll say, Steve, you performed above and beyond any hopes that I ever had that I'm starting to ramble on, and I'm not making any sense. Anyway, George is out in the picturesque town of Brookline. How you doing, George?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you, sir?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Well, this is a moment of most auspicious moment for me to talk to two voices that have given me much pleasure.
Did you notice the way I got included with you, Steve? That's nice.
And Mr. Norm Nathan.
Wow.
And all I can give to you is this, that when I got my cum laude, I got it in the bakery shop because that's where they have a lot of the background to give a person a good job in the bank, you know, a lot of dough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's going to do...
Not so good.
You're going to do one-liners? Is that it? You auditioning for something, George?
Well, it's the other one, you know. I had just one more.
Well, do that.
And this fella had a job, and he was a bootmaker. So he got into the clerical business because he was dealing with a lot of souls.
George.
I've done my best, Mr. Allen and Mr. Nathan. George. Do you remember the poem I sent you, Norm?
Oh, God, yeah.
So I wish you all those pleasant and kind remarks.
Hey, thank you for calling,
thanks,
George.
For calling,
yeah, bye-bye.
And don't ever call again, whatever you do. No, he's a nice man. You can hit with that with people who come up to you and say, Steve, I got just the joke you want to use. And they tell you, and what is your reaction when, because 99 times out of 100, it's going to be a terrible joke.
Yeah, about 90% of them are awful. And one of the first things that puzzle me about that. Now, today, there's so much filthy humor in show business, it's really sickening. But back in the 1950s, let's say, nobody ever even said heck on television. Everybody who was funny and clean, and that's a nice way to do it. But it was amazing that people used to come up to me and tell me the filthiest, foulest, most disgusting jokes, and they would say, you can maybe clean that one up a little bit. You know, I never understood that.
What if it's this clean joke, but it's really awful? And you're a polite man. Do you smile and say, that's very nice? Or do you say, boy, that really stinks. Go away.
I can never, you know, put the people down to their face. I figure maybe they'll try telling the joke to their cousin and he'll straighten them out.
Okay. Just one final question. And this is the final question for real. What about humor? I mean, you know, we mentioned the fact that a lot of it's foul. A lot of it, the guy standing up against the brick wall say things that don't even make you laugh out loud. A lot of it just sounds like it's coming out of a robot, automatic kind of humor coming out of nothing.
Right.
Are there funny people around now that you can think of that could make you laugh?
Oh, yeah. Of course, the fact that they make me laugh is not a great thing because everybody makes me laugh. The whole universe seems pretty weird to me, so I laugh at everything. But even if we limit it to other professional comics, I'm the biggest pushover in the business. I probably laugh at about 80% of the funny people, new and old. And I used to think I was just normal in that regard, but I discovered some time back that I'm unique in that regard. Most professional comedians seem to laugh at only about 40% of their peers. And that's too bad because they're missing out on a lot of laughs.
Okay, I won't pin you down on any specific humorous, you know,
no,
comics.
By the way, I'm not one of those old-timers who just likes other old-timers. Of course, George Burns is funny. Of course, Groucho is funny. But I see a lot of brand-new guys I never saw before in my life, and they break me up. They're brilliantly funny.
And you're brilliantly funny yourself, Steve. This has been a great thrill. My pleasure, Norman.
I'm sorry I was late getting to
you. Oh, I'm glad you're on. I'm on for many hours more, and you brighten up this whole section of the program for me. Tony Nesbitt, our producer, just wanted to talk with you off the air just for a second or
all
two.
Right.
Oh, and I thank you very, very much. My best to you and your family, and for a very, very happy Easter. And thanks for coming
on. Thank you, too. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye. Steve Allen, everybody.
Ruth Frost of Fruitport, Michigan, is telling us about her skin problems.
It was just a heat rash, but I had had it for years. It was that bad. Very red, very irritated, and extremely painful at times, and especially in the summertime, you know, when the weather was warm.
But Ruth Frost got relief using Triple Action Gold Bond Medicated Powder.
I'll tell you, that's the best I ever had, Gold Bond. It's cooling, soothing, and it smells nice. It answers the problem, boy. And now that skin is just as smooth as can be.
Gold Bond's triple action is like three great powders in one. It has the absorbing action of powder, the medicating action of a proven itch fighter, and the drying action of zinc oxide. That's triple action Gold Bond.
It's cooling, very soothing. That's Gold Bond. I tell you, I am very happy with it, and I use it every day. It's good stuff, boy. Don't change the formula.
Try Triple Action Gold Bond Medicated Powder. Use only as directed. Available at CVS stores.
WBZ and the Lottery have teamed up to make you a Boston Marathon winner. We'll give you a head start by sending you to the start of all marathons, Greece. Stop by any lottery agent directly along the marathon route and pick up your official entry blank. Send it in with a non-winning lottery ticket and you could win a seven-day cruise on Sunline Cruises, including round-trip air from Boston via Olympic Airways. Same plane, no pain to Greece. No purchase necessary. All entries must be received by April 27th. Contact WBZ for complete contest rules. Be a winner with a Mass State Lottery, Olympic Airlines, and WBZ. News Radio 1030.
Boy, that was really a kick. Really a kick for me, because I've talked with a lot of pretty good name people through the years, but there are a handful of them that I really get a kick out of, who I really have a great deal of respect for. And Steve Allen just ranks way, way up there. If Jack Benny were alive today, he'd be ranking up there too, and Fred Allen and a few others. There aren't many beyond that, but he is something special. Steve Allen. I was telling you about the book I just finished reading called How to Be Funny, Discovering the Comic You, and he says that's only his 38th book. He's written three since then. He's probably right now probably writing two more books, which he'll have published by morning. Very prolific man. Okay, Tony Nesbitt is our producer. My name is Norm Nathan. We'll go back to the regularly scheduled Norm Nathan program, already in progress, after the news. And love to talk with you and talk about Steve or talk about anything you'd like to. We do keep things light through the night. So with that in mind, you can do call 254-1030. Our area code is 617. A lot of interesting guests, incidentally, coming up throughout the next week. I'll tell you about as we go through the night.
Spend your lunch hour with Paul Harvey News and Comment and find out how the news has changed. The WBZ News Hour at noon, only on News Radio 1030, WBZ Boston.
That was a great show, and you could tell how much Steve enjoyed it as well. He provides so much insight in so little time. This is one show that I listened to multiple times to absorb and notate the many things he said. I would find additional points to write down each time. I hope you found it as entertaining as I did. Did you love traveling from Iowa to Hawaii, back to Boston, then off to Michigan, and back to Massachusetts, and then end with the possibility of a cruise to Greece? Baby Gold Bond, Caitlin Travel, the Boston Marathon, regular Gold Bond, and the Mass State Lottery provided our commercial entertainment. What will next week's edition spring forth with? Subscribe and hit the notification bell so your streaming machine alerts you when it posts. Closing the vault and riding the radio waves home. For Dave Maynard, Gil Santos, Sharon Barbano, Tom Cuddy, Norm Risha, Upton Bell, the tongue-tied Fred Gendron, the incredible Steve Allen, and the man who broke the great genetic cookie cutter, Norm Nathan, I'm Tony Nesbitt.